Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy-ad-free. That's amazon.com/comedy-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, you lovely lot. No, this isn't Jim Smallman doing a comedic northern accent. It is a familiar voice, though. Answers on a postcard, I guess. Welcome along to Tuesday Night Jaw. Support everything that's on this wonderful network that we're on. Distraction Pieces Network. Loads of wicked podcasts. New ones popping up, sprouting out of the ground everywhere. Make sure you're following the boss man on Twitter, Scroobius Pip. He'll tell you how good his up-and-coming podcast is. It will always be dead good, because it is always dead good. So yeah, make sure you're supporting everything on our network. If you want to find out more about us and our archive and anything that my boss man's up to, go to jimsmallman.com/TNJ, all in lowercase, and you'll get to see loads of lovely information on there. So we probably should.
This is so weird to watch.
This is possibly the weirdest situation I've ever been in. It's like that movie where the daughter and the mom swap bodies. It's got Lindsay Lohan in it. Is it?
Oh, there was loads of films like that.
I was going to say wife swap, but that's a totally different thing.
There was a raft of those films when I was a kid, and then there was another raft of them when I was in my mid-20s, which is when the Lindsay Lohan one happened, I think.
Which was a remake, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a remake.
Yeah.
Freaky Friday. There you go.
Well, you've got a twisty Tuesday.
Who are you? You've not introduced yourself yet.
I know, I was just about to do it.
I feel like I have to monitor this stuff for this podcast only.
Hello, my name's Matt Richards. You've probably heard me on such episodes as several roundtables, a one where I shoehorned in Dragon Gate wrestlers and other such things.
This is now becoming a Toriumon podcast.
It is. Well done. This is a Milano Collection 80 tribute podcast. You're welcome, internet. No, I'm actually going to be conducting an interview with me dad. Not biological.
Am I old enough? No, I'm not old enough to be
nah.
How old are you?
I'm 30. I'm 30. Well, I'm actually 31 in less than a week.
Really?
Yeah.
Good reminder. I'm glad I took you for dinner now. I feel like I've done something.
Yeah.
So there's 10 and a half, 11 years difference between us.
Yeah.
So I can't, I mean, I'm from a rough town, but I'm definitely not your dad.
I was going to say, like, I feel the term early bloomer might be a bit genetically impossible.
Yeah.
I'm actually joined by Jim Smallman.
Hi. We're being a guest. But I guess I am today. So
you are. You're in my house, and we're gonna do a Twisty Tuesday, Freaky Friday situation where I'm gonna talk to Jim, and Jim is going to be a Tuesday Night Jaw meets
guest. And also, this is on me rather than being on Matt. Like, sorry, there's not been a lot of podcasts. We'll talk about this in a bit. But I get quite a lot of people messaging me going, "Where's the podcast?" I'm like, "Well, there's a really good archive, but
it's tremendous.
I don't think there's actually been a podcast. There's not been many this year. There's been a couple this year. I can't remember.
Yeah, it's been inconsistent.
But I have no concept of time. In that, my wife pointed out to me that it was a year ago this week we went to see Flight of the Conchords in Liverpool. I genuinely thought it was 2 weeks ago.
It's a year ago to the day since Royal Albert Hall, because I saw it on Twitter.
Oh, good lord.
Day one, finals.
Because you put a thing up, didn't you?
Yeah.
About Jerry Gibson.
The most the most unpartisan I've ever, not Belgrade, unpartisan fan I've ever been, which is a wonderful moment because I was sat with a few wrestlers, mainly Mrs. Gallagher, Jack Gallagher's wife, and friend of the podcast, Chris Brooker. And we were very well behaved throughout the whole show. We got to the final, and it was obviously Chase Banks versus Zach Gibson. Anyone probably who knows me knows that me and Zach go back a long, long time. We're good mates.
You could go, anyone who knows me knows I hate Travis Banks.
Yeah, I just hate the Kiwi Buster, man. It's fine. This is my platform to finally get out. So we're watching the match and we're really enjoying it. And it gets into the near falls and they're getting closer and closer. And I can't remember what, it might have been a Helter Skelter because that's, you know, the usual one. Helter Skelter, and there's a one, two, and our whole section audibly goes, "Argh!" And we all kind of look at each other. Interesting side note, Distraction Pieces Network's boss, Scroobius Pip, was sat three rows in front of us and turned around and saw us.
With the cast of the film he was in at the time.
Yes.
Which I can't remember the name of.
It's the wrestling film with Stephen Graham, because Stephen Graham was there.
Stephen Graham, yeah, because he came backstage afterwards. Yeah. And that was that weird moment of bumping into one of my friends in Pip while I'm at work.
Yeah.
And then, and obviously at the time, and this is something we'll talk about in a bit, at the time when I was doing this podcast, I couldn't say that was work.
Yes.
Because I think that was still at the point where I didn't really talk about it. So I'm at work and I've had a hell of a day because at the time, like, I'd worked there for maybe a month and it was weird. It was. And so I bump into Pip, which is great, as one of my friends.
Yeah.
And then I bump into Stephen Graham, who I've met before and he remembered, which is really cool.
Yeah.
I met him at a comedy club and weirdly, I think I used to work with his wife.
All right.
His wife was a drama teacher. I used to work with her. So, like, that's a really cool moment. He's a great actor, and that was a really, really cool moment. So that was all like, oh, this is really, really mad. And then immediately behind me, being hurried out of the building, was Triple H and Shawn Michaels. And I'm like, oh, everything's really surreal now. This is a very surreal day. And I'm in the Royal Albert Hall, where I once had a bet with my dad. If I ever worked in the Royal Albert Hall, he would get a tattoo. Now, he thought I was going to do stand-up in there,
which is
a very lofty goal, considering limited I was at stand-up. But I technically worked there. I worked there for 2 days.
You did?
So
we're having a Tuesday night draw special where we tattoo your dad.
Yeah. I mean, he's so scared of needles.
Oh, it's fine. So you'll be fine. I'll get one with him. I keep saying that. Here's an interesting... I don't think I've ever told you this. I don't even think I've ever told Pitt this, so... It, on the note of Stephen Graham and Pitt being in the same building, on night two, I was sat up in a box for some reason, and I noticed they throughout...
Walk like a panther. Sorry.
Yes, it is. Walk like a panther.
Oh, thank God. Sorry, carry on.
So I had a lofty view. So, guys, you know, if you've ever watched mainly NXT TakeOvers or a WWE special, they wheeled guests into the audience and they're like, oh, here's a guest. Yes, very, I will never forget that because it was so beautifully awkward. So the night...
Remind me, I'll tell you that story in a minute.
The night of the TakeOver, they wheeled Christian out, which is like awesome because we're all like, oh, it's Christian. So what you don't notice is Pip starts walking towards where Christian is and I'm thinking... Is Pip going to, like, tackle Christian? Is he still mad that he's won a ladder match at WrestleMania or something?
Double-legging.
So he actually ends up walking past Christian, completely ignores him, to go and see Stephen Graham, who then I notice, and I'm like, bloody hell, that's Stephen Graham, who's a wonderful actor from such films as. And there's this wonderful moment where, if you go back and actually watch the special, Pip's just walking aimlessly in the background as Christian's doing his, like, peeps taunt and whatever. And
I have
just
not noticed this and now need to see.
Yeah, go back and watch it. Anyway, so, back to the original point.
So, just to tell you quickly my story about I was... So, the first Blackpool show, the original NXT... Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, the original WWE United Kingdom Championship tournament. So... We're backstage as guests, and they say to us the same thing they said to Mark Dallas from ICW and I believe the guys from OTT as well.
Yeah,
they were like, "Do you want to just go and like sit in the crowd and we'll put a camera on you?" And I think we were the first ones to do it, and we were like, I'm sure, but it's weird. And it was only, Glenn was still doing Buddy Holly at the time, so it was only me and John.
Yeah, I remember the show.
And Glenn went the next day while we did a show in Birmingham, yeah, where half our roster was in Blackpool, which is why we end up with Finn Balor playing musical chairs, and Aleister Black still when he was still called Tommy End.
Yeah.
So the whole thing was a very weird weekend. But yeah, so they get you to, so they have a seat, they put seats specifically out for you, so you get taken out there about 2 minutes before you needed to be out there, and often the person taken out here will be a writer or someone like that, or probably our friend Henry, who works with his dad on the WWE show.
As seen on from photos from your recent FIFA tournament in the hotel.
Yeah, he played the FIFA tournament with us because he just turned up because he lived down the road.
He's also been to a Progress show as well.
Oh, he comes to Progress all the time. Yeah. Henry, everyone loves Henry.
Yeah.
So, we get put in these seats and they go, okay, camera's coming on you in like 10 seconds. Just wave. And so I've explained this to other people when they've had to do this. I think I explained it to Kaylee Ray and Piper Niven when they had to do it. And I was like, listen, it's going to feel like you're waving for roughly 4 hours.
Yeah.
Because no matter how long you think 10 seconds is, 10 seconds of a camera being pointed at you, and you know people are watching you. And I don't like, regardless of what people might think, I hate attention. Hate it. So I hate, having a camera on me is the worst, and it's one of the reasons I hide my face in photographs, and the only place you can really see my face now is when I do
it's IRL. Just take a look at it, get dead close to him next time you see him.
So I'm waving and John's next to me, and John's loving this for some reason.
It's smiling,
he's having the best time.
He was programmed to smile.
Go back
excitingly.
And watch it. Like, I'm smiling for the first 2 seconds, the next 8 seconds is me like honestly questioning everything in my life at that point, because I just started panicking, going, what am I doing here? Why is this happening? I've never wanted to run away more. Not because I'd love being there, and getting the opportunity was great. It just, there's something weird about being told to do one thing for 10 seconds until eventually you're told you're clear. And I don't know, maybe they did the 10 seconds and then just kept filming us because it was funny for the next three or four minutes.
I'd do that, yeah, definitely.
But it was a weird experience.
Do you want to know another weird tie into that weekend with the mentioned Progress show? My first ever Progress show I commentated on.
Was it?
Yeah, because it was the Birmingham main event was Rampage Brown versus Matt Riddle.
What, did you commentate on it because Glenn wasn't there?
I believe that's the situation, yes.
That's interesting.
So my first ever Progress show started with Finn Balor coming out and playing musical chairs.
Yeah, which we worked out 2 minutes before we went out. And he Finn came up to me and went, what would we do? And he'd just arrived and he was jet lagged and stuff. I went, I don't know, musical chairs? He was like, cool. And then I was left the power of improv to mess around with it and have fun with it. And it was fun.
It was.
And it was a weird start to a show, let's be honest.
Yeah, and going back to my original point, which I will do. During the main event, and there was a big kick out of a near fall, and everyone kind of made this audible, like, ah! We all went, ah, just fuck it. Let's all just cheer Gibson. So there was a part of this audience that clearly everyone kept on, like, looking at us going, who are you people? Just screaming at the top of our lungs for Gibson to win. So needless to say, when he won, and we're jumping around in our section, and we're all, like, quite nicely dressed, because we're friends and family and stuff like that. And I've never wanted to fight people in my life more than in that moment that were booing him, and it's one of the only times live at a show that I've ever let myself actually like really get aggressive about it. I do it at home all the time, like the things I say at home when I'm watching shows.
God, yeah, the things you said before this podcast started.
Oh yeah, terrible human being. That's why I'm taking over from you, from one terrible human being to another. But do you know what, that's actually an interesting point though, because a year ago we were sat in the Royal Albert Hall, both of us, admittedly doing very different things. I was probably drinking, so, you know, there's that as well. But the change within, and this doesn't just mean NXT or WWE or anything like that, but the change in wrestling full stop in that 1 year is astronomical. Like, to me, I forget things happened a month ago. But it just seems to be in the last year or two that there's been an accelerated rate of progression, and for lack of a better term, no, that wasn't a branding thing or a marketing thing.
Yeah,
Because if you told me, I mean, even Gibson being at that show in a main event at one point, 2 or 3 months before that would have seemed like improbable.
Yeah, I think it's not even like a case of a year. Like, this is what we were talking about before. Like, if you look at the journey of British wrestling as a whole,
yeah,
in the last decade, so we've gone from. And whenever I say stuff like this, people always go, oh, but there wasn't nothing. I know there wasn't nothing, but it wasn't what it is now.
Ooh, and I can attest to
yeah,
that.
And you can definitely testify, because you were a wrestler.
Yeah.
So, like, it just wasn't what it is now. And it's not that we didn't have the talent, because there's definitely people in the UK who've perhaps slightly missed out on this sort of golden time by being slightly the wrong age, for example.
But this is, I think, what's interesting is that's 100% true. Because I was very fortunate that I came through with a generation that was phenomenally talented, and still is phenomenally talented, but was criminally overlooked for a long time. And again, I'm talking from a Northwest point of view. So Ligero, Spud, Joey Hayes, CJ Banks, Danny Hope. There'll be others that have a name, Chris Travis, obviously, Martin Kirby, you know, the list goes on and on. And then people like Gibson and Gallagher came after us. But the difference was that our intention then was never to be, oh, we are going to go to WWE, because no one went to WWE. Like, the fact that people...
Well, one person, so someone like Drew McIntyre would go there from
okay,
time to time.
But
it wasn't...
When I met Drew when he was 16, I was like, oh, you're going to WWE because you're the tallest man I've ever met in my life. He was a monster. And admittedly, he needed to put a bit of timber on, but he did. But again, you had exceptions like Mason Ryan obviously went during the time. But things like Robbie Brookside having dark matches at live events was, we were like, that's the pinnacle. And there was a couple of lads that had tryouts. There was a couple of lads that had like extra work. But to us, our little corner of the country was the biggest thing. But the big thing for us was we always wanted to build a platform to make things better for the next lot, because we all came from training schools. Right. So, you know, it was whether we were working for Future Shock with the guys like, you know, you've got Chris Egan, Sam Bailey, and obviously ultimate like people like Jack Gallagher and Gibson coming through. We always were like, okay, well, our job here is to lay the foundation, and someone else comes in and puts the bricks on top, and then we start building and building and building, and we go from there. So I do feel like there is this, I hear it a lot recently, where people are like, such and such is so overlooked and underrated. But if you actually sit down and like, just go through a cage match and look at people like Ligero and Hayes and Banks and all these people, go and look what they did. They've done amazing stuff. But the difference from then to now was there was never a platform for us to take the next step up. And I think that's been the progression of British wrestling, is that regardless of promotion, it's always felt that a platform has been laid for us to then go, okay, well, we can go from here to here to here. Because, you've got to feel that even when you promoted the first ever Progress show, you've said on record that you were just like, oh, we'll do one show.
Yeah, we'll do one show, see how it goes, not lose all our money. We did lose a lot of money. Not as much money as we thought we'd lose, and then we decided to do another one. And then Glenn came on board, and then we didn't lose quite as much money. And then by about show 7, we didn't lose money at all. And then we were getting to a point where the show was selling out so quick that we thought, hey, maybe we can do more than 300 people. And then we started doing 700 people. And then at one point, Wembley Arena came and said, do you want to do a show with us? And we initially said no. And then 2 years later, we went back and went, yeah, fine, we'll do one now. And we sold nearly 5,000 tickets, which is, I find, it's astonishing. It's astonishing as well how, like, I was very public about this at the time when we did Wembley. Like, I had a goal in my head. It was like, if we do 3,000 tickets, which is roughly what I think Impact did there once. They did more than that, but they did. They definitely did a show there, because I went to it. They definitely did a show there where there's only 3,000 people. And I was like, if we can do 3,000, we won't lose money. We won't make a lot of money, but 3,000 would be great. And that was all I always have a figure in my head of what I want us to hit for shows like that, same with tours. I was like, we get the 3,000, that's brilliant. And then we did that pretty quickly, and then we crept up to 4,750, which is legit, not kayfabe in any way, because I don't believe in doing that with tickets. It's stupid. And yeah, and like, that's astonishing. Like, that is, I have a plaque on my wall in my lounge, which you've seen, which is
representative of
the biggest independent wrestling show in England.
It's all right, isn't it?
Which is great. Well, that's awesome. Like, that's a really, really cool thing to do. And, but when we started with just 300 people, it was like, we're never going to, like, even getting 300 people. That show sold out. We've sold out, I think, certainly every London chapter show. There might be the odd one in Sheffield where we've had 10 tickets left or something like that. Mm. And obviously, like, we could always get more people in Ali Pali. We could always get more people in Wembley. We could always get more. I think we could maybe get 20 more people in Brixton Academy.
Yeah.
We could have got more people in Victoria Warehouse in Manchester, but they were very full for the, what we wanted. But we've sold out nearly every chapter we've ever done, which is unbelievable. Like, in 7 years of doing that.
I was talking. Mad. Do you know? I was talking to a Pip about this. He did a distraction pieces podcast that you can find on this network with Cedric from Out of Driving.
Mm-hmm.
Like Out of Driving, which is probably no surprise to you because you know me, like the band when I was growing up, along with like Refused, and I was getting into hardcore and Shout Screamy Guys, and I like Mars Volta and everything. I was listening to that podcast, and they mentioned that Out of Driving did a gig. It was, I can't remember if it was Mars Volta or Out of Driving, but they did a gig at the Electric Ballroom. And it's the first time in my brain that it's gone, you do the Electric Ballroom? And I was like, oh shit. And like, I actually went onto YouTube and like watched the whole video of like the live performance on the stage.
There's a TV that we series. Do. There's a comedy TV series filmed in it.
It's just bizarre.
Like, which is fun as well, because whenever the guy who runs the venue, who's lovely and has worked there for 30 years.
Yeah.
And whenever they film a new season of that, and it's whatever Russell Howard presents or whatever it's called.
And
every time they've just filmed, they'll film a whole series in a week,
right?
And every time I'll go in, he'll be like, why aren't you on that? And I'm like, well, I don't really do comedy anymore. He's like, but they're all terrible. I'm like, they're not, some of them are my friends, they're not all terrible. I mean, some of them probably are terrible, but they're not all terrible. And and he's always like, no, I don't understand it. I'm like, yeah, but I'm, that's a very different audience. Like, I'm 41. Yeah. I'm not, if you look at that show, nearly every comic on that is under 30, and that's what that TV station wants, and that's fine. But it is always weird, because I'll always watch it and go, that's where Pip watches the shows
from.
That's where Joe Atherton watches the shows from. And I can see all that in there, and it seems weird. But I went to tons of gigs there. I went to tons of gigs at the Garage as well. And for a long time, my favourite photo of me is me at Brixton Academy with my arms spread in front of the balcony.
Mm.
And all I was thinking at that moment was, because the flat floor's in, the ring is half on the stage.
Yes.
So if I stand in the middle of the ring, as I was when that photo was taken, I am pretty much on the edge of the front of the stage. And while I was doing that, all I was thinking was, last time I came here, I watched Deftones here, and Chino Moreno was stood right here, and he's one of my heroes.
Yeah.
So, like, having that link's always really, really cool. And But it's mad, and we always wanted to run in music venues. It's weird when we do the tours in America. It's weird because often you're in like rec centres and stuff, and they're not.
It's not
quite
the same.
Some of them are, because they're like ECW arenas. It's funny because it's got the legacy.
Because obviously, growing up in Manchester and watching gigs in Manchester, the Ritz is the Ritz, and like it's as much as I love the Ritz, and like I'm still like blown away that we do the Ritz. It's funny that I remember when Fight Club announced they were doing Manchester Academy.
Hmm.
I was like so gutted I couldn't be there to do it, because like that's where I've seen insert every single band I've ever seen. And like, you do have that affection for certain venues. Right, here's a question for you, because I'm interested in this, because you're talking about, you mentioned Brixton, you mentioned Wembley. What was the show that was the turning point for you? Like, whether, I don't know, I'm not necessarily meaning like financially, but like mentally, what was the show that you went, oh, what we're doing is actually gonna be successful? Or,
so if I want to say show one, because at the end of show one, I think we realized, like, fans are chanting, this is progress, and you realize, oh, hang on, we might have done something completely by accident. We didn't set out with a cynical business plan of you know, and this is why promotions like Five Star annoyed me so much at the time, is I think every good promotion in the UK, and there's lots of them, right, from from ourselves at Progress to OTT in Ireland, to ICW in Scotland, to Rev Pro, Attack, Fight Club Pro, all these great promotions. Like, all of them, like, none of them set out to, like, make a load of money or, you know, or try and sell out X amount of shows or try and do X event. It was literally, hey, let's put a show on, let's make good wrestling. That's what everyone wanted to do. Whether your background is in some promotions like Fight Club is from run by people who are wrestlers, or if your background is like us in Progress is wrestling fans who worked in entertainment. Like, that's what I think good promotions do. Yeah. It's just, hey, can we make wrestling that people like? Awesome. That's it. That's the mission statement. That's all the mission statement should ever be. The mission statement shouldn't be, I want to take over the world. The mission statement should be, hey, can I make something that people like? And if people like it, then maybe you can take over the world. But with promotions like Five Star sprang up and just went, hey, we're just going to book arenas because, hey, all these other companies, they're doing really, really well. Yeah. So how hard could it be? Well, I can speak for myself, and I think I can probably speak for everyone else who's been a wrestling promoter in this country over the last decade. It's really hard. It's not easy. It's really fucking difficult. You can't just click your fingers and go, let's fill an arena now, using pretty much the same talent that everyone already uses.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't just do that. And so for me, show one, there's a point, Glenn always brings this up whenever me and Glenn talk to people within the world of wrestling, whether it's podcasts or just chatting to them. Like, he always brings up, because he wasn't in Progress from show one.
It was like two or three.
Show two. So he saw how exhausted I was at the end of show one and how happy I was. Like, there's a point where I'm just hitting the mat because I'm so pleased with how well it went. And it meant a lot to me because I love wrestling. And at the time, like, the chapter one's also the only show where I wasn't with my wife. So, like, it felt like it plugged a gap in my life that I didn't have anything for. Outside of my daughter, who I didn't see a lot at the time, I had nothing. Like, I had comedy, which I was good enough at to make a living out of, but not. I didn't want to get on TV, which is a part of the problem, but I didn't want to be on TV. I knew very much what I wanted to do in comedy, and what I wanted to do was never going to pay the bills, so I was stuck in this weird limbo. So I was never going to. That was never a thing for me. But whereas this, I didn't look at it and go, hey, maybe one day wrestling fans will know who I am. It wasn't that. It was just for that. Those 3 hours of that day in front of those 300 people, we made something really, really cool. And if in retrospect, if you go back and look at chapter one compared to what we do now, it's okay.
Do you know what? It's really funny because I asked you this because I don't think I've ever told you this. But like, I never heard of you for ages. The only way, the first time I ever heard of you, I've got a friend, Andrew Sovin, used to buy your DVDs when they were numbered.
Yeah, he used to do some graphic design for us at the beginning.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, and there was the cover with Ligero in black, and I was like, well, "Who's this?" And he was like, "Oh, this is Progress thing." And I remember, like, all of us up north, all right, or like the group that I was, we just used to look down our nose so badly at you. We're like, "All these bloody southerners thinking they know about wrestling, doing all this talking with all these videos and stuff. There's no wrist holds or whatever and stuff." And I remember the chapter that turned. It was 13 that went on YouTube, wasn't it?
Yep.
And I watched that. I'll never forget. There was it's 13 when Jimmy kidnaps Osprey, isn't it?
It's the way
he cut his ear off.
I believe so.
That was the moment that I went, oh shit. I was like, these guys are doing something that is super, super different.
Well, so if you watch the first show, there's a story thread runs through the first show, and then we kind of have a few storylines, but then Jimmy's the first real storyline that we did. And if you look at those shows, the way the shows were structured, it's still kind of how the shows are structured now. We have more stories now because we have more shows and we have more people watching the shows because of On Demand. But the way the shows were structured was, we have one big story, Jimmy, and before that it was the heel screw indie wrestling stable, and so that was our one big storyline was Jimmy. Chapter 9 is the show where he beats me up. And as I pointed out many a time, I lost quite a lot of my hearing in my left ear. Completely worth it. Knocked me out completely in the ring. Great. Don't care.
Cheers, Jimmy.
I love him dearly. And it was, you know, we would not be anywhere near where we were without that storyline with Jimmy, and about how much Jimmy dedicated himself to it, and then Jimmy being champion for nearly 2 years. And it chapter 9 was where I think everyone went, oh god, because we did something very different. Like, it was weird because not long after that there was quite a lot of non-wrestling characters being beaten up by people because it worked for us. It worked really well. Like, and I don't think people saw it coming. Even when he gets in the ring with me with the chair, I don't think anyone sees it coming because I'm not a wrestler. And I've said this on stage and various stand-up shows, but I mean, how I prepared for that was I just let a man beat me up for real. So it really hurt. Like, all of it really hurts, and he hits me, watch the chair shot, he hits me hard.
It's really funny. It reminds me of, so there was a storyline years ago in GPW, which is Grand Pro Wrestling now in Wigan. It was called Garage Pro at the time. It's Joey Hayes versus a guy called TJ Kane, who doesn't wrestle anymore, but he was one of the first people that went over to like Philadelphia with Hero, because he wrestled Hero on a show, met Mike Quackenbush, and like he went around about the same time as Claudio Castagnoli, and like Tom was like one of the best, and they did a feud where like it was basically former tag team partners gone bad, and they did an I Quit match, and the finish to the I Quit match was TJ Kane grabbing Joey's little brother out of the crowd and like threatening to like not murder him, but like threatening to do damage until Joey gave up and like tapped out. And I remember at the time, like, I was like, that was like, wow, that's like really different and really powerful.
It's Nick from ECW.
Yeah, I know, but like, I know, but the thing is, it's like, it's that thing of like, for British wrestling, that no one was taking risks like that. Because this is the thing, the problem we had for a long time in British wrestling was that, we had this obsession with getting on TV. Like, TV was the main thing, and like,
and we had that obsession because TV was taken away from us.
Yeah, and again, the debate was always between the old lot, which was, well, we're British wrestling and we should be British wrestlers, and the new lot, which was, well, this is a successful model, we should be copying this. And that's why like a lot of like American influence came in, but that's why we lost our identity for a long time. So I think really, the thing that those storylines that you did, alongside the stuff that ICW then did, was really cement the fact that we shouldn't try and do a carbon copy of a successful thing. We should do something that's organic and is different. And I really think that like when that started to happen, a lot of things started to change. And like, again, it's that thing of like, I think everyone has like their own island of like, well, this happened in this promotion, this was really different. And again, like, you know, there's people out there that are real like historians for Northwest scene and will know better than me, but there's various storylines that people were doing up here that were different and organic. And I think it was just a confirmation of these little pockets of ideas and little pockets of people that when like, you know, you guys did that, and ICW did the whole Grado thing, and they did the whole documentary, that it was almost like, oh shit, yeah, why are we trying to be...
But also, I think you look at the two things that us and ICW had in common, and it's less true now, because the landscape has changed a lot in the world of wrestling, and both from a point of people being under contract, and also from the point of view of fan expectation. So... But when we first started, we'd have an import maybe once every 3 or 4 shows.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was it. Yeah. Like, Ricochet, we used Cox Brown on the first show. We used Ricochet a couple of times. That was about it.
Yeah.
Right? And the reason was, is we wanted to... the original reason was we didn't have enough money. That was the original reason, and there seemed to be no point spending a ton of money getting someone who may, for example, maybe used to be in... Because it felt like this is what a lot of promotions did.
Yeah,
someone who used to be in WWE, who you can do photo opportunity with, didn't seem like what we wanted to do.
Yeah.
So we wanted to try and do something around all this British talent. I'll be honest, when we started, I didn't know loads about the British talent. I went and watched shows.
I was going to ask you about this.
I picked out people that I wanted to see, and John picked out people he wanted to see, and Glenn was more of an expert on the British scene than we were.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was that thing of, oh, we may as well use British people. And the same way ICW was doing the same thing. Yeah. And specifically, when we started, we were using a lot of people. The occasional person from from up north, like Rampage, who came from Durham or wherever, and then from
young Zach Diamond,
and then young Zach Diamond Gibson. But like, we were mainly using people from the south because easier and it was cheaper, and we didn't have a lot of money. And ICW was the same. Built a great core roster of Scottish guys. Not everyone was Scottish, but a core roster of Scottish guys, and it meant that. From a storytelling point of view, you've always got those people. If you fly someone in for one show, you don't have them for every show, right? Now, what we've always tried to do since then with imports is try and use them a lot. So, for example, one of our champions in progress now is Jordynne Grace, who is an import. But she's both defended the title overseas, because she can, and we still try and use her whenever we can in this country. It's not an issue now that we can only afford to bring someone in once a year. But then, you know, I enjoyed it when we started doing that, but then things do shift. And like, a great example is for Super Strong Style 16, you put tickets on set for that. And one criticism of it is using a lot of imports. And the other criticism of it is, but I want to see this insert name of import.
Yeah.
So you caught in the middle, because as British wrestling fans, because our scene's so hot, and everyone wants to come from overseas to come and work here.
Yeah.
Right. And all these cool companies are using cool imports all the time. What happens is you then, everyone's expectation of what you can have on a show raises up. And I think now, if we did a show now, a regular chapter show, and we used a mixture of, we used all British based talent, and we definitely did like we used to, with a mixture of very, very newish sort of guys at the bottom of the card and established guys at the top. I think a lot of people would look at the card and go, but this doesn't seem very stacked, because we've all got used to it being the way it is.
And you're right, because like, I remember Gallagher, when Gallagher was sort of on that tear in Manchester, and like he wrestled like RJ Singh, he wrestled Joel Revan, who were two fantastic wrestlers, but it wasn't until the match he had with Davey Richards, which is the... If anyone's ever been to a British wrestling show in the last 15 years, will know the promo of, I didn't know who you were before I had this match, but I sure know who you are now. Promo. Wham, wham, wham. But for one of the first times ever, it was a legitimate thing. And they built to the Royal College of Music in Manchester show, which was headlined by Gallagher and Davey Richards. And again, it was one of them moments where it was like, oh, that import was accentuating a British talent who was on...
Which is what we are. If you look back through the beginning sort of years of progress, with the exception of Samoa Joe, who I think nearly everybody on their first match in as an import, nearly everyone loses. And it was, you know, it was to help establish our roster. That was the point. And again, I think it worked. Like, I think... It also meant that we fit that remit of, like, Jimmy was at the top of the card, having, you know, a long feud with Will that also included Noam for a long time as well, and Mark Andrews, and like, so he's got this long feud going on with everybody who's a babyface. But underneath it, you know, we can have insane matches where we just go, hey, here's Prince Devitt and Zack Sabre Jr.
I was going to say,
and that, because that show, and that's such, it's such a serendipitous moment in that the sound failed for that show, so we put it out for free. And so many people have watched that show, and especially in America, when people say the first show they've ever seen of ours is nearly always that show. And we've put other shows up for free since, because we can. But ideally, we want people to subscribe to Demand Progress. That's how we make a living. But I think, like, that one show, and in particular the that match, it's bought because Finn Balor's such a huge name now, he's bought so many people. And don't forget, he had like two of his last indie matches were for us. I think his last ever indie match was for us, which was when against Jimmy. And
was there Hannibal Lecter?
It was the Hannibal Lecter one, where we kept him locked in a room, and because garage is so small, there's nowhere to hide. Just kept him locked in a room attached to a tray, his little green thing. Fucking weird day. But, a lot of weird days because of wrestling. Like, like,
you're so used to it that you're almost like,
I try to not have it be too weird anymore. Like, because it's,
I can tell you the moments that I have literally had. So there's two moments that stood out for me when I literally, my brain went, oh, you're in a really weird situation. So when I introduced the Elite versus British Strong Style at Dream Tag, the first ever one, which, again, to put into context for people that now go to Fight Club Pro, we were at Fiction, and we were getting, and again, I'm sure Trent will come and find me and beat me up for giving incorrect figures, but we were getting roughly about 250 into Fiction, and that was a good show.
It's a small venue, to be fair.
It was literally cramped. And then to go into the banqueting hall and getting over 1,000, like, I'm sure it was close to 1,500 on the back of that. And my brain just had this moment where, it's still my best G up, and you'll know this as an MC, you never leave you. And, I did this whole thing because we were running late and it was sweaty and hot and it was just awful. And I just went fucking ham on it and, riled everyone up. And then the British Strong Style music hits and everyone loses their mind. And it was, just that perfect storm moment. And I'm like, yeah, and I'm really in the minute, the moment. And then just about to introduce Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks, and my brain goes, fuck me, what are you doing in this ring? That's fucking New Japan guys and new WWE guys. I was like, oh shit, shut up, brain. So I'm if you watch the video back, I'm fighting myself internally. And the only other time that I was what the fuck, was when I introduced Shima, because I loved him as a teenager, and never in my brain was there ever going to be a moment where I was going to introduce a Japanese wrestler.
So I, with me, there's little...
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
There's little moments, both with me day job now, where I'm I can't believe I've met this person, or you know, been backstage when this has happened, or you know, that to me is nuts, because I've been a fan. A fan since I was 4 years old. This is 37 years of being a wrestling fan, and now my full time living, you know, my joyous hobby of being a wrestling promoter has led to me getting a full time job in the world of wrestling, which I adore. And that's mad. And there'll be times I'll just sit there and just go, oh, I'm sat next to this person. This is a bit surreal. Or this person knows my name. Also in your head as well, especially if you're working for WWE, you get to the point where you're you build up in your head, you build up this idea of, oh, I've I don't know if people are going to be nice to me. And all I've done is meet people who are nice to me. And not only people who are nice to me, but people who are nice to me and value what I do for a living.
Mm.
And like that, I spend quite a lot of time just going, I can't believe insert name here said yeah, good yeah. job to that. Like, I just, to me, that's crazy.
Yeah.
And there's been, definitely been moments of progress. Introducing Samoa Joe was a big deal for me. Introducing Finn Balor was a big deal for me on the three occasions I've done it.
Yeah.
It's the beginning of the show at Wembley, I don't tend to think about things a lot of the time because it's not like I'm just the ring announcer.
Yeah, yeah.
If I'm just the ring announcer, I go out, I think I'd have more time to panic about stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But because I'm backstage doing everything as well, not everything, obviously John does most of it.
I was going to say flipping heck.
No, but you know what I mean? I'm doing all my other jobs as well. Yeah. So I'm then going out, like, at Wembley, it was literally like, oh, is that band finished yet? All I was doing is like, we need to get going now. And then I go out there and I'm like, oh, that was nearly 5,000 people.
I told you about my delay Wembley cry.
No.
When I kept on going on about Wembley, that I was like, I'm going to cry, but I don't know when it is.
Mm.
Like, the whole show was fine. After party became a joke and whatever. 2 weeks later, watched the whole show, just got to the main event, burst out crying. I was like, oh, that's what it was then.
I've never watched the show back.
You don't do this, do you?
So
this is why I still have a job, isn't it? Because you don't listen back to my commentary.
I've listened to it from the 80s show.
Oh my gosh.
So I will watch, if a talent asks me to watch one of their matches back or a promo back, I'll watch it.
Yeah.
But I've watched the show. I was there. I've moved on to the next one in my head.
Yeah.
But if I think something's like some of my favourite ever matches, I've watched multiple times because I'll show them friends when I want them to see what I do for a living.
Yeah.
So like Walter and Thatcher,
yeah,
and Mike Skirl and Chris Hero, and Jimmy Havoc and Will Ospreay, and like these are all things I will show people. Jordan Devlin, Will Ospreay, Jordan Devlin, Kyle O'Reilly from Super Strong Style, which is a match at the time. I don't think I appreciated how good it is. But like I have to watch the shows back for really mundane reasons, like to time how long the music is and stuff, which is just really boring filing stuff I have to do.
Yeah.
And so I'll watch that and then I'll maybe watch a little bit of a match and that's it. But I very rarely watch a whole show because for me, I've got to get all this information out of the show in like an hour window when I'm not doing my actual job and I'm not like looking after my son.
Yeah.
So I just don't get a chance.
Your real son, not me.
Yeah, the real one, the lad.
Right, question.
Yeah.
On the import subject, as a car reverses aggressively.
It's really aggressive reverse, isn't it?
Where's he going?
Is he doing a J-turn?
Oh, God. Right, we've talked about imports. Mm. Very fortunate to work with some awesome people. Who that you haven't booked, import-wise, would you love to book?
We've now booked her. That was Miko Satomura.
Yeah.
Which I'll come back to a story about her in a minute, which a lot of people have heard me and you talk about before, I think. So Miko's one. I love Japanese wrestling, so I'd like to use more Japanese wrestlers, but I answer this question a lot in Q&As, like contractually it's a problem. We can't use New Japan guys because the deal they have in this country is they can only work for Rev Pro. That's fine. Is what it is. We've tried to use people from Noah and All Japan and places like that, but it's not the easiest thing to do because there's a lot of political manoeuvring you have to do in order to make those deals work. Which is a shame because, you know, using someone like Miyahara would have been great.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And for every Super Strong Style, we've always tried, which is why it was so great when someone like Shihiro Irie came over and he's unattached and we're like, brilliant, we can just have him around and he's great.
I still remember when you booked Flamita because I nerded out about it.
Mm.
And we...
It was based on me watching one match.
Yeah, yeah.
So we discussed this over dinner. So there's a writer called Arnold Furious, who's a good dude, and he's written three books. I think only two of them have been published, which are basically just his adventures through watching a whole year of Japanese wrestling.
Mm.
And in one of those books, which I was reading with great interest, he talked about a Flamita match in Dragon Gate. So I went and watched this match, found it on the internet, watched the match, was blown away by it, was blown away by Flamita.
Yeah.
Showed it John and went, we need to book him. And he went, okay. Then took 9 months to book him because he's terrible at answering his emails. But that was...
I was half watching Dragon Gate at the time and you were like, oh, you've watched this match? I was like, yeah. And we were going on about the outside in 450.
Yeah.
Which was just... I've still never
But also the fact... the thing that blew me away most about him was he wasn't just a luchador.
Yeah.
He did all the stuff that I like. So all of his strikes... Because... I apologise if you're a Lucha Libre purist, but I like some lucha I really like. And there's, you know, there's great guys like... Obviously, we used Daga and Aerostar during Super Strong Style. I think both those guys are great. Pentagon and Phoenix are obviously two of the absolute best in the world. Ray Horace is fantastic. Yeah. Bandido's worked for us. And indeed, he's a former tag team champion with Flamita. Those guys are fantastic. There's a lot of stuff that is brilliant in its place within the world of Lucha Libre. But then when you take those guys out of it and put it in a different wrestling environment, isn't the best. In the same way there is with Japanese guys, the same way there is with British guys who kill it here and then can't seem to catch a break somewhere else.
Yeah.
It's just one of those things. But then you do watch people like Hijo del Vikingo at the minute, Laredo Kid as well. Like, you watch these guys and go, if only there's a way, but it's trying to find a reason to use someone. Like, booking someone like Miko... The reason is she's the best wrestler in the world.
Yes.
Pretty easy. Like, that's a very easy title match for me to make.
It's, so, the thing with Miko, though, is it's taken a while for her to come into progress.
And she's been to a progress show.
She has. I was there. I was there when she was in Nando's later on with Emi Sakura.
So,
as well.
So, to explain what happened, she nearly worked for us that day.
Yeah.
So... So Miko does Wrestle Queendom either on a Saturday or a Sunday. So she's in London, and Chris Brooks says, oh, can Miko come down for the last day of Super Strong Style? And I'm like, yeah. And bearing in mind, I'd seen her the day before, and I'd been introduced to her before, I think at Fight Club Pro, I think. So I'd already met her once.
Yeah, I think you were at a show when she was there, yeah.
So I've been introduced to her before. I'm... been a fan of her for a long time, and also like watched her on Nitro when I was a kid, for God's sake. Like, you know, so she's still younger than me, don't worry.
I know, because I could have put her in the Hall of Fame, couldn't I? I was annoyed.
So she's the previous night, the Sunday night, there's a Nando's near the hotel where all the talent are in, for Super Strong Style. I want to say in Finchley in London, wherever it was. So in this Nando's. Apparently Will Ospreay had told, who was at the show, because I think he did Angle, didn't he? Wrestle, he did Angle.
Oh yeah.
So Will had told Miko about Nando's, and she'd never been to Nando's. So Miko and Emmy proceed to sit in Nando's for legit 3 hours.
Yeah. Because me and...
Everyone had sort of passed. I went and got takeout, because I don't really like sitting in restaurants and stuff after I've been working. So I went and got takeout and whatever. And I'm sitting in there for half an hour waiting for my takeout, and she's there. Just eating all this chicken. Like they ordered everything on the menu.
Oh, they did, yeah.
Right? And it's really good as well, because like, she's one of the most sensibly dressed ladies in the world. Like, I always think, dresses slightly like she's a teacher. She obviously she is, because she's one of the best wrestling teachers in the world. But like, and I was just like, she's so nice. And she comes backstage at Progress on the Monday, and she's really happy to be there. But... when she was on the way there, we thought about putting her in the Hangover Scramble.
Wow.
Right? Okay. So I'm messaging Chris Brooks going, tell her to bring her gear. And he couldn't... she'd already on her way before she got... but if she'd have bought her gear, Miko Satomura would have been in the Wasteman Challenge Hangover Scramble.
Okay.
Trying to explain the concept of that match to her would have been one... because we've had to explain it to Flamita once, and that was weird enough. Right? But, like, it would have been one of the coolest things in the world. And 100% she would have won it.
Uh-huh.
Like, I mean, because I don't think we could have convinced anyone otherwise. But then, at the end of the show, she was talking to me, and she was like, oh, I can work here. And I was like, I'd love you to, but... and I gave her the reason why I wouldn't. And also, she did say to me, you are a very good talker, which is one of the nicest things. She's like, oh, so cool coming from you. And one of the main reasons we didn't want to book her was because she was Fight Club Pro champion for a long time.
Yeah.
And didn't want it to be that she'd then come into us and, you know, potentially might not be winning... when she's the champion of another promotion that I'm a particularly big fan of. So it did seem like, and we were very, so I think we were very patient because we were desperate to use her. And now, you know, things have changed a little bit and we can. But I'm very excited about that. I think the reaction to it as well, when we announced it, was people going, oh, what? Hang on. Because it's a big show, the show in September. And we want to make the biggest possible deal out of doing that show at the Alexandra Palace again.
I think it's fascinating for me with Miko that she has done so much for British female wrestling. Because she's obviously with the likes of Millie going over to Japan to do Sendai, you know, Chevins, even people like Jordynne Grace that's had an opportunity to go over there. She absolutely would have, even if she had come here or not. But obviously Heidi Katrina's out there as well as a regular member of the roster. So I think she's just such a fascinating footnote in an incredible career that Miko Satomura came and got involved in British wrestling at a really peak time. And I think that's something, I don't know, this is something really like charming about that, because again, like she's a legend. Let's not be around the bush. She doesn't need to be here. She doesn't need to be involved. And every time she's been over, she absolutely loves wrestling. Not just the girls, like anyone. And I think that's super cool, man.
The best bit about her is so say you've got a legacy like she has, and you're in your late 30s. You could phone it in a bit.
Yeah.
But she doesn't,
dude. I've been ringside when she's hit the max kick. She doesn't phone it in.
But she could.
Yeah, she could.
And she hasn't.
No,
because she doesn't want to. Because she's a pro. Exactly what if Regal was still wrestling, he'd be exactly the same.
Yeah,
that's how I look at it. She's the Japanese female equivalent of William Regal. That's what she is.
It's high praise though.
So and being able to use is great. And you know, and also you know, being able to do that little thing of saying, explaining why, because people have wanted us to use her for ages, but you know, like dates didn't always line up, and we always wanted to be respectful of what was going on with Fight Club. So you know, it's the right way to conduct yourself, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Well, we'll talk about the day job in a bit. We'll probably end on that.
How long are we going? Doing good, 53 minutes. That's not bad for us.
Tying it for us. Usually we'd be talking about what we did in 1997 while watching Plymouth Argyle. And I did used to go and watch Argyle. I used to go and watch Argyle because I lived in Cornwall. I was a young pilgrim.
When did you live in Cornwall?
From 5 to 10, I lived in St Austell, which has now got the Eden Project, but it wasn't there at the time.
That's where my uncle used to live. How old?
But yeah, I was a young pilgrim, and I used to support Argyle.
So when did you get? When is Blackburn? Do us the full rundown.
So I started supporting.
No, I'm just trying to figure out where you lived. So where were you?
Oh, so I was born in South Wales in Merthyr. Yeah. So one, 0 to 5, yeah. Down to St Austell and Cornwall. Yeah. 5 to 10, and then I went up north. Well, it was about 5 to 9, but then I went up to Southport originally. But football-wise, I'd already started supporting Rovers around like 94, 95.
When they won the league.
Yeah. I was a Glory supporter, which is the most hilarious thing, because the reason I stopped supporting.
Thanks for sticking with them.
Well, I stopped supporting them, didn't I? Because they sold the club and it just completely changed.
So I used to work for a internet sports station called Sports Tonight, which is where, if you go on YouTube, put my name in.
Sounds like an Alan Partridge sketch rotten show.
Right. They probably still owe me money, right? And they did this basically sports phone-in thing every weekend. So I'd end up being doing that, and I'd do another like sports panel show during the week. And then they went, do you want to do a wrestling show? And I was like, cool. And it was a cool thing for me to do. At the time, I kind of wanted to be a TV presenter. I'd been a radio presenter, and it was one of these things that I'd do. But whenever we did the phone-in on a Sunday, I'd always goad Blackburn fans.
They're easily goadable.
Because like, it was the whole... who was that? One of their managers under Venky's?
Steve Keane
was
Keane
the
out.
One.
Yeah.
So it was the Keane out stuff.
I stopped supporting him,
It was the Keane out stuff, because I think at the time they were in the Championship as well.
So the reason why the Keane, because it's frustrating because a lot of people think the reason why a lot of Blackburn fans stopped supporting Blackburn was because of the fact that we got relegated and we went down and down and down. It wasn't. It's because the whole of the club changed. There was, I can never remember his name, and I know there'll be a Blackburn fan listening to this screaming it, but it's the liaison between the board and what used to be the Jack Walker family. Kenny, I want to say Kenny Williams, but that's just making me think of the wrestler. He ended up going to Man City, actually. It was the minute he left the board, I was like, the club's in trouble. But the reason why a lot of Blackburn fans didn't like Steve Keane is because he stabbed Allardyce in the back. And it's not like we really liked Allardyce because
massive back to stab.
He did. And like a big fatty gammon back. And like, because I was like, I don't really want a former Bolton Wanderers manager coming in, especially when it's Big Sam and whatever. Especially after we'd been spoilt with Mark Hughes and that team that we had with like Morten Gabbs-Pedersen, David Bentley when he was good, Santa Cruz, McCarthy and all that. But it was just that thing of like, you could just tell that club was on a downward spiral in terms of what the club was and what it meant to the community. Even the state of the ground, man. Like, the state of the ground used to be like really spick and span, and like it was
it's rubbish now.
It's really nice, family-friendly environment, and it's just, it's a genuine shame. Like, and the only reason why I don't call myself a Blackburn fan now is because I think that would be disrespectful, because I couldn't even tell you who plays for him.
Do you know, have I told you my story about me being chased around Blackburn at the age of about 19, 20 years old?
No, but I kind of want to know now.
So we played Blackburn away. It's the last day of the season. It was the season we won the League Cup, so it was 1997.
Right.
And it was the last day of the season.
That's dead weird, because I'm trying to figure out if I would have been watching Rovers around then. I think
you wouldn't have been one of the people chasing me. They were quite angry.
No, because I would have, it might have been just before. I would have been 97, 98.
Yeah. So, I think we lost 3-2, but it didn't matter because I think Coventry got relegated, which I was delighted about. And I think Coventry got relegated. It might be the next season they got relegated. But I just remember we finished eighth, which was a big deal to us because we never thought that happened. Look at us now. But even now, I'm still realistic. Looking on our forums, it's brilliant because obviously it's close season at the minute. And we're trying to buy Youri Tielemans, who's one of the best players in the world. And the amount of people going, just give him the money. Like, we're never going to get top six. We're never going to get top six again. We've angered all the big teams. We won the league. We've completed football. Just step away. Like, that's like, now we have this weird sense of entitlement of, it's that thing, if you spoil people, our fans are like, we've won the league, so when are we going to challenge for the league again? Never.
Never.
That's when. Never.
Once in a lifetime.
Don't worry.
Do you know what's funny?
And also, if we win the league again, it means that's not as special.
No. No. You were saying about Coventry, which really caught me off. It's like, who hates Coventry? Chase Alexander is a Coventry fan.
Really?
He's the only Coventry fan I've ever met.
Millie McKenzie's a Coventry fan.
Well, that's understandable because she's from Coventry. I don't know where he's from. Chase, let me know where you're from. My uncle was weirdly... my uncle, born in Merthyr Tydfil, South Wales, was a Coventry fan for a long time. Also, by the way, Pip, we're just turning this podcast into...
Football now, isn't
it? James Richardson, technically now.
I'm going to tell you two Coventry stories, and also the Blackburn thing was, when I was younger, I was never really badly behaved at the football, but I was a gobshite.
That is shocking.
And I was a gobshite until before this incident. Like, I was more of a gobshite until the age of 17 when Leicester got promoted in the playoffs. We played Stoke away and I got a proper kicking, got proper hiding off Stoke fans, like really bad.
Oh, wow.
So I behaved myself a little bit more. Not this trip to Blackburn, because this was a point where I was still drinking and I thought this was a really good idea. So... on the way into Ewood Park, I'm walking along with my dad and a couple of my mates. And I'm like, it's depressing here, isn't it? And my dad goes, yeah, it looks like the Hovis advert. So I then decide to try and rile as many Blackburn fans as possible by singing the Hovis music at the very top of my lungs. Until a load of them decided to try and chase me to stop it happening. So two Coventry things. Right?
Bloody hell.
First thing, there used to be a stand-up gig in the Showcase Cinema in Coventry. I think it's still there. So basically, they'd empty out one of the cinema screens.
Oh, right, yeah. Okay,
and they'd do stand-up in there. It was one of the worst gigs. Legit one of the worst gigs in the country. If you still think it's a good idea to run a gig in a cinema, get in a fucking sea, never come near comedy again. There's a lot of people who can never come near comedy again. I'm a lot more bitter about comedy than I am about wrestling.
I was going to ask you a question in a minute, but I think I know the answer.
See the stand-up show I'm doing next year. I'm going to burn all bridges. So So I was well known. If you lived where I... So I grew up in Henkley, which is between Leicester and Coventry. And if you supported Coventry or Leicester, you probably knew who I was, because I used to get at every game home and away, even in the first few years of me doing stand-up. So I go and do this gig in Coventry, and there's a load of like Coventry's firm in there. Mm. And they're stood at the bar, and I'm like, ah, there's a back door. So I do my one Coventry City-related joke, which is... I grew up in Henkley, which is equidistant, good word, equidistant between Leicester and Coventry. In the middle of Leicester and Coventry. So when you were a kid, you grew up supporting one or two teams. Either you were like me and you supported Leicester City, or you supported Manchester United. And like, I just started throwing glasses at me. It was great. I did need an escort out.
That's actually probably the only...
And then this is... And this is the other one. And this is genius. Mm. And I told Mr. Regal about this a little while ago, because it's of a genre of music we're both fans of. Yeah. So... we're playing Coventry at Highfield Road, and before the game, there's a DJ who I don't think had ever worked in a football stadium before, and he's like, I'm taking requests, I'll play whatever you want. And he reads out a message, which is, this is dedicated to all the Coventry City fans from your friends at Leicester City, and proceeds to play Ghost Town by The Specials, a song about how shit Coventry is. Genius.
That's a hell of a song.
That is, but what a practical
joke. That's good. That's all. You can't get away with that stuff anymore. Like in
that's such a dad thing to say.
You can't. Okay.
Oh, political correct has gone mad.
Well, it's not. It's just the, you know, there's lots of money in football. So it's I've got two questions for you off the back of that.
I was going to say, you're going to ask me the comedy one.
Yeah, I'll save that one to last.
Okay.
So you're a fortunate man for many reasons.
Yeah. Fucking looked out massively all through life.
Yeah. Would you trade what you're doing now to like host Match of the Day?
No.
Do you not?
No, I love my job. I love my job so much.
Like I'm not trying to get you into trouble.
No, I know you're not. And here's the thing. Like, I'd just avoid questions about it. But yeah. I was talking to someone else about it the other day, and I have nothing bad to say about my job. I love it. Mm. And like my job with WWE is a joy, and I absolutely adore it. And yeah, it's meant I can't do comedy anymore because I don't have any time. And that's fine. I was done with it anyway. So, like, and I miss it. Like, from time to time, I'm like, I'll take the emceeing gig. Because people keep going, oh, you like Terry Funk, you keep coming back from retirement. But no, I am retired. It's not my job anymore. Like, I will do the occasional guest appearance because a mate asks.
Yeah.
And I miss it. And also, it's the only thing I've got to fall back on.
I think that's the interesting thing is, like, the other one was, would you go back and do comedy? But it's that thing of like, I know how close you are with certain people from the scene, and it's not like it's the way you are in wrestling now, is that you've got your mates just because you met them through that thing. You're still your mates and stuff. I mean, like we've got a mutual friend in Tony Jameson, and like, you know, it's like it's and I know you're still tight with lads up in Sheffield as well, and it's like I think that's a nicer thing to have. Because again, I think. Correct me if I'm speaking out of turn here, but you really got to a point with comedy where you were burnt out with it, and like when we would hang out, like
I did five gigs a week. I'd travel 1,000 miles, and here's the thing: like one of my most vivid memories about doing comedy was I used to drive a proper piece of shit Ford Fiesta when I first met my wife, and I remember I did a gig. I want to say in Nantwich, but the town hall in Nantwich. It's a good gig, actually. It's a good gig run by a wrestling fan.
I am confident we've done a wrestling show in Nantwich.
Probably in the same place, right? Yeah. So, and I did the gig there. I want to say I did it last New Year's Eve. Not, well, it wouldn't have been this last New Year's Eve because I wasn't doing comedy, but the year before. And great gig. Love doing it. And the gig's in front of 400 people, and I've done one of the best MCing performances in my life. And I leave, and as I'm leaving, like, all the punters are leaving at the same time, and they see me getting this piece of shit Ford Fiesta. And you can see them all looking at me going, well, he must have a drug problem or something, because that could be the only reason why he's not driving a fucking Rolls Royce like Bernard Manning used to drive. No, here's the reason. Like, that gig actually paid all right.
Yeah.
But most comedy didn't.
Yeah.
And if you factor in how many miles I used to have to do, and... And here's the thing, I love comedy. And yeah, the best thing about not doing comedy anymore is I now enjoy comedy again.
Yeah.
Like, I listen to at least one stand-up special a day, which is what inspired me to want to
I
do
I mean,
one
every time year. I get in your car and you don't want to talk to me anymore on the long drive home from Progress.
It's because we've literally discussed everything we can discuss, and all we do is get miserable about stuff we shouldn't get miserable about. So there's no point. So, like, after a while of complaining about shit we can't ever change.
I mean, that's the name of our double act, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just like, let's stop being miserable. Let's stop. Let's get a cake and listen to some fucking stand-up. And I'll blow your mind with some cool stand-up. That's what I like to do.
Yeah.
But that's what I used to be like before comedy. And now, and then comedy made me... See, wrestling has never made me like that. No point of working in wrestling has made me not want to watch more wrestling.
See, the thing is like...
But everything in comedy made me not want to watch comedy. And part of it... was the fact that, I can say this now because I don't give a shit anymore, like, it's the most unfair industry in the world. Here's the good thing about wrestling. As a rule, if you're a 20-year-old kid and you're breaking into wrestling, right, and you've already been wrestling 3 or 4 years, and you're getting good, you will get signed by someone, right? That will happen.
Yeah.
Right? It's not like we started talking about at the start, like, there were people who did get overlooked because there wasn't a scene. Yeah. Not anymore. If you're dead good now, you will get signed. Yeah. Whether it's the WWE or elsewhere, you will get signed if you're good. Someone will notice you. You will make a living out of wrestling.
Yeah.
Right? That to me. And if you're absolutely dreadful, you probably won't get signed. Right? Like, that's... And that to me, that's really fair. Because people are rewarded based on their level of skill.
Yeah.
Right? Comedy... is not strictly speaking like that. And this is not me going, well, why wasn't I live at the Apollo? First of all, I wasn't good enough to be on Live at the Apollo. I have no issue with that whatsoever. Mm. But I was good. I was booked by nearly every promoter in the country. I did, and even then, I did not make enough to be able to live moderately comfortably. Right? No one in comedy does. I was a starving artist for a good decade, despite having a really good agent who looked after me, despite doing radio, despite doing television. I was never well off. The only thing that got me out of debt was doing voiceover work. Right? Comedy never would have got... And this is what I always say to comedians, new comedians, if they want advice from me, is get another job.
Yeah.
Like, Progress was my other job. Comedy was my main job. Progress was my other job. And now it's flipped. Progress is still my other job and WWE is my main job. Right? That's how it is. And the amount of people I know, the amount of amazing comedians I know who will never get on television... Right, and you'll get older people in the world of comedy who'll go, oh well, it's because political, it's nothing to do with political correctness. Right, it's completely right. This thing that came up the other week about them not wanting all male writing teams anymore. Abso-fucking-lutely they shouldn't want all male writing teams. It's the stupidest thing in the world.
2019.
Yeah, it's 2019, and at least half your audience is probably going to be female.
Exactly.
What's wrong with you?
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, from that point of view, it's absolutely... I never look at it that, oh, I wouldn't... maybe I would have been one of the 6 panellists on Mock the Week if they didn't always have to have a woman on it. I'm not one of those fucking idiots who think stupid things like that, because as a rule, nearly all the women who are on Mock the Week are friends of mine and they're all dead good at comedy, right? But there are plenty of people who don't ever get noticed. And the biggest problem within comedy is ageism. So, I'm 41. Like... I didn't start comedy until I was 27. I didn't get good until I was 30. By the time I was 30, I was too old.
Yeah.
Right. By the time I was 35, I could have entered Old Comedian of the Year. At 35. Oh. When I was 16...
I've got something to look forward to.
When I was 16, my favourite comedian in the world, who still is, was Frank Skinner.
Yeah.
Right? Frank Skinner was nearly 40 when I was 16. So, it's absolutely ludicrous... To think like that. It's what's known in comedy as the BBC Three mentality. Because BBC Three was this incredibly important channel, and it's not, because it went bust. But it was seen as this incredibly important channel to everybody, and the only people who are watching it are 14 to 20 year olds. Well, when I was 14 to 20, I was laughing at people who were in their 40s.
Yeah.
I was laughing at Monty Python. I wasn't laughing at people who are making jokes aimed at me, because to me that was basically all watching Nickelodeon.
Do you know what I think? I think it's really interesting is though, is like you're talking about comedy in a way that wrestling used to be like. Like again, I've said it on this podcast before, but I left wrestling when I was 21 for 3 years, 2.5 to 3 years, and then I only kind of half came back and started ring announcing because of Bailey and like his suggestion. But I just got so burnt out with wrestling because it was that thing of like, it wasn't even the thing of like, oh well, you know, you're never going to get to go to WWE, because that was like a given. But it just became so frustrating because it felt like everyone was just fighting over scraps and like these tiny little patches of earth that meant nothing instead of enjoying the thing that we all love. And like I never felt out of love with wrestling. Like I used to always say that like the one thing that I've always loved about wrestling is the minute the bell rings and the match happens, that's it. Everything before it at that point in my life I hated. Like it just wore me down. And I think what was so good was having that break away and then coming back to it and remembering that I loved it. And then it just seemed to go from that point of view, that point where like I think people just started enjoying it again, and then opportunity opened. But I really think that like the some form of separation sometime is needed if you're getting burnt out with something, because I think it's that thing. Because like even now, like with comedy, it's like I know you hated the industry, but you're coming back and doing that special in 2020. Yeah. And it's because you still love comedy.
But I'm doing that also to have a legacy, because I've got nothing to show for nearly 15 years, isn't it? For next year, I will have been doing it 15 years. And I've got...
Oh, you want to do that? I mean, I'm in my 15th year of wrestling. I need to do something, don't I?
So, like, but I've got no...
Right, I'm having a death match.
I've got no legacy for having done, like, 2,000-odd gigs.
I get that.
Like, and 2,000-odd gigs, and genuinely only ever having two really bad deaths in that time, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
Like, but I also never got to do what I wanted to do. And there's you know, there's so much in comedy I wanted to do that I'd never get the opportunity, no matter how hard I worked. Like, I got to do one little thing for Radio 4 once. I love radio, and I'm a trained radio presenter, and I'm not thick. Like, I do a good job of pretending that I am when it suits me, but I'm really not, right? And, like, I was desperate to do stuff for Radio 4, and the amount of times I'd be told it's not really suitable, which what it really meant is you're common. Mm-hmm. Like, you didn't go to Oxford and Cambridge, mm-hmm. which is, you know, there's huge parts of the, and this is why wrestling's so good. At no point am I going to turn down the, if I see a video of two wrestlers and they're both brilliant, I'm going to want to book both of them. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to want to book one of them because he went to fucking Eton or Oxford or Cambridge, right? But that's not what it's like in the entertainment industry.
Yeah.
Like, there's that. This weird old boys network that no one even knows they're part of, and then all of a sudden that's what happens.
Yeah.
And my agent, she's still my agent, she has to fight against that shit all the time.
Yeah.
And it's stupid. It makes no sense. Wrestling is not like that.
Yeah.
Right? And never has been and never will be. Oh. Right? Yeah. You know, if you've got an incredibly powerful friend in the world of wrestling, it might help you out. But that's the most that happens. No one's looking at what college you went to. If you're trying to get...
I'd be in trouble.
Do you know what I mean? But like, no. If you try and get a job in the entertainment industry as a writer in Los Angeles, they're going to look and see if you went to an Ivy League college first.
Yeah.
Or if you paid a lot of money to go and work at one of the improv schools. That's what they're going to look at. They're not... Whereas if you're a wrestler, like, yeah, if you get a great collegiate background and that's why you're coming in and that's why you're being signed, brilliant. But they're not looking at that. They're looking at how good a wrestler you are, how much you connect with an audience. Yeah. That's how comedy should be judged, and it isn't. Because I know for a fact the best comedians in this country are not on television.
Yeah.
The best comedians in this country are not doing huge theatre tours,
yeah.
Right? Everyone who is doing those things is good. I'm not saying they're bad, right? But the best, the very best are being ignored. The best comedian in this country, if you love comedy, you know who he is Daniel Kitson. Daniel Kitson is the best comedian this country has produced in years. Frank Skinner is famous, so people know him. Daniel Kitson, most people know him as the short-sighted guy who worked behind the bar in Phoenix Nights.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He's unbelievably good at what he does. And yet, very few people outside of a little clique of comedy fans know who he is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's wrong. He should be the most famous person in this country. Right? But the way our fame structure is and everything is wrong. And I started stand-up around the time that reality TV started becoming a really big thing. And it fucking ruined it for us.
Yeah.
Like, a few years ago, all of us we'd say no to doing Britain's Got Talent. Like, everyone would get asked and we'd all say no. Whereas now, I've got a friend who's won Britain's Got Talent. Lee Ridley, the Lost Voice guy. So, yeah.
And, but I've weirdly seen and been part of his show.
Yeah, and he's great.
Yeah.
And it's brilliant, really for, it's brilliant really for him good. That he won that. But a lot, but that's now your best bet.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, your best bet is for that. And that makes it an incredibly unfair industry and only brings into sharper focus what a wonderful place wrestling is. Like, people like to try and make problems with it. Then it's not a problematic place. It is a good place.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like, I do think the fact that if you're good, people will notice. You will not go unnoticed. Unless your attitude is rotten. That's the only way.
Yep.
And then, but that's, I'm a big believer in that. If you're a brilliant comedian and your attitude's awful and you're rude to everybody backstage, and one of the most famous comedians in this country, I won't name, one of the most famous comedians in this country is one of the worst human beings in this country. Like, but we let him get away with it. Why?
Yeah.
In wrestling, that doesn't happen. If you're one of the best wrestlers in the world, but you walk into a locker room and you're a dick, you get found out really, really quickly.
Yeah.
And that's why I love wrestling. And that's why wrestling has not ground me down, but comedy has.
Yeah.
That was a long-winded explanation, but I think I made a point.
I feel like it was cathartic and you've got it out of your system, man.
I did. God, well, that's the thing, because for a long time I didn't feel I could criticise it. And I might still have to go back to doing it. Like, that's the biggest fucking fear. Like,
yeah, please find this episode when it went in, like, 2022, when he's fine, back on Showcase Theatre in Coventry in front of Coventry fans and he's doing the United Jericho.
I don't think I could go back to it. I think I genuinely think if wrestling fell through for me now, and it might, like, I'm going to work really hard and make sure it doesn't, but if wrestling did fall through for me, then I'm a writer, so I can write and stuff, but there's not a lot of money in that, so I'd work in a fucking warehouse or drive a van. I'm not bothered, I'm not proud. Like, I used to work in a warehouse when I was a kid, and it was the most joyous I think I've ever felt, because I had tons of time to think of ideas about stuff I could write later on and not have to worry about paying the bills.
There we go.
So to me, that's, you know, that's ideal, and I'll do whatever I need to do to feed my family. It's awesome that at the minute I don't need to stress about that sort of stuff, because wrestling is affording me a life where I can feed my kids, I can pay my bills. I got my AstroTurf.
Right, well, let's get to it. Let's get to the final point / question. Because again, it's, as much as we're joking about it, it's a bit weird that I'm doing this.
Yeah, I should probably explain why.
Yeah.
So, I'll do this.
You'll do that. I'll look at him. I'll tell you what, he relinquishes control for like an hour and then he's
Well, that's the thing. This is about relinquishing control. See, I'm aware there's not been many podcasts because I've been very busy with my new job. My new job has kept me incredibly busy, and it's a job that I adore and take very, very seriously. So I will no longer be hosting Tuesday Night Jaw going forwards. I will occasionally appear as a guest because Matthew has been very considerate and moved closer to my house.
It wasn't planned. But closer to his house, I'm living in his shed.
I wish I had a shed. I spoke to Scroobius Pip about this. We want to keep Tuesday Night Jaw running because we know we have a lot of people to listen to and a lot of people who enjoy it. Matthew is the obvious choice to take up the helm and run it going forwards. I will occasionally appear from time to time. But if we're being honest, I mean, I'm away for like 2 weeks of every month doing my job, and it keeps me very, very busy. And if I'm being really selfish, and I am, when I'm at home, I kind of just want to hang out with my wife and my kid.
Understandable.
So, you know, that's why I've been a bit lazy.
I think the thing as well, though, is like when we were speaking about it, like this podcast is as important to me as it is to you and everyone else that's kind of on it, because it still blows me away that a lot of the times that, like, when I'm at shows, people talk to me about this.
Oh.
Like, I had a Rich, hi Rich, and I'm assuming you are listening to this podcast with your son at night, because Rich came up to me at Strong Style and was like, introduced himself, and he was like, oh, we love Tuesday Night Jaw, and I actually listen to the podcast at night with my son when I'm getting him in bed and whatever and stuff like that.
Mm.
And his son refers to me as Breadman. Rich ended up dropping me a DM on Twitter afterwards and was like, my son was so excited to say that I met Breadman. So yeah, Rich Owens' son. This is Bradman saying hello, and you're going to hear a lot more of me. So for me, like, I still want to keep this going, and I still want it to be what the essence of it is, which
is positive.
Which is, apart from if it's comedy.
Apart from if it's comedy or five-star wrestling.
Yeah, both or five-star comedy.
Both things can get in a fucking
That's the next venture we're going
to
do.
But it is meant to be positive. Like, no. the whole reason, that, and this podcast, you know, yes, I haven't put many episodes out this year. This podcast has been wildly popular, way more popular than I ever expected it to be. Turns out Pip always expects it to be popular because he's a fucking podcast genius and famous as fuck. So, a little while ago, I did say to Pip, look, I am struggling with time. And he was like, hey, Matt should do it. And I was like, hey, that's a really good idea. And then we've decided to pull the trigger on it and get it. But we want it to be positive. Like, there is no reason to be negative about wrestling. Like, yes, the occasional thing will irk you as a wrestling fan. But you know what? In the main, wrestling's dead good. It is. It's brilliant. Like, every day I wake up and... Yeah, when I say I go to work, me going to work is me going to my kitchen table and opening my MacBook, right? But most of the time, it's waking up in a hotel and not realising what
town middle class that sentence was. Me going to my kitchen table and opening up my MacBook.
Do you know what, though?
I'm gonna go to my shed and open up my MS-DOS.
So, my son's now middle class. I realised this because his favourite flavour of crisp, my favourite flavour of crisp when I was his age, was cheese and onion.
Sound.
So working.
I like the one where you had to like do it yourself. Salt and shake. Yeah, that's right.
My son's favourite flavour of crisp. I'm not making this up.
It's avocado.
No, they are barbacoa beef and dill pickle tortilla chips with black beans. I'm going to say woven in, but that's not how you make a chip.
I'm gonna be like the horrible uncle that like.
I mean, you already are. You already chopped you to death.
Oh yeah, he did beat me up. But I'm gonna ground him in loads of common stuff. I just throw overs at him and.
Mate, I've just watched you eat tacos. It's fine. Yeah, So we still want it to be positive. I mean, you were talking about you still want to do roundtables and stuff.
Still want to do roundtables. I want them to mean a bit more and have a little bit more thoughts to them. I really want to do. More Tuesday Night Jaw meets with a plethora of people because I think there's just so many people out there now, especially just within this scene, that have some really cool stories. And like, I don't want it to ever be like this person is on this podcast because of their stature. I don't want it to be like that they are literally here because they're a name and that name's going to make people listen to it. I really want people that have interesting stories and there's a lot of diversity of their stories and how they started and what they got involved in wrestling and what wrestling means to them, but as well as what wrestling's afforded to give them in terms of like a personal life as well and like how they've enjoyed more things. I've got a list of people that I really want to do, but and I'd really love to do more live stuff because I can't even begin to tell you how much like I've always enjoyed our live shows. When we did the podcast festival in London, it was awesome. Especially the first live one we ever did at Progress.
That was great. I mean, I'll probably still be around for those, where I can be, especially if they're around Progress because I'll kind of be there. So like we still want to keep this going and. Yeah, there's probably not going to be one every week because you have a life as well.
Yeah.
But, you know, we'll try and get one out every couple of weeks, right?
I mean, I've just got to trim your AstroTurf every now and again, so I'm sure I can fit around that.
Look, you're my pool boy once.
This is it. This is it. If you're wondering what my contract is I'm assigned to Jim Smallman's service agency.
That's because you sold your soul to me. For a Milky Bar ages ago. So I'll be around from time to time. We'll change the graphic at some point so it's got Matt's face on it.
Which is a
mine.
Far better face than his, so
easy.
You're welcome for
can
that.
Still take this away from you. I have ceremonially handed over the recorder to Matt.
Yes.
So he can do it. Yes. And as it gradually means that there's less and less places you can see me actually or hear my voice. Until gradually there is nothing. I mean, I'm not on Car SOS anymore because they binned me off. I haven't done an advert in a while.
No.
So, you know, eventually
Hey, Roy Johnson was on an advert the other week.
Was he?
Yeah, he was sat next to a bloke on a plane.
Was it for cheese? It's a really good joke.
Wow.
Yeah.
Maybe comedy isn't dead after
no,
all.
No, no.
But yeah. Me. Okay, right. Let's wrap this up. JimSmallman.com/TNJ is all lowercase.
Yeah. Let me plug stuff.
Yeah.
Quick, because I'm a guest. I get
okay,
to do it.
Okay, Jim, plug some stuff.
Buy my book.
Oh, how aggressive was that?
Buy it.
Do I sound like this?
Buy my book. Lots of people have bought it. Enough people bought it to bring it out as a paperback, which is hilarious, especially if you're one of those people who really hates the fact I wrote a book. So...
I mean, I'm one of them.
Yeah.
And I'm credited in
you are credited. Lots of people like it, which is awesome. I get lots of really nice messages about it. It's really cool. A lot of 16-year-old kids have written GCSE projects on it, which is kind of cool, including a kid at my daughter's school.
Oh, that's
and she went, my dad wrote that. And this guy was like, really? Which is even better, because she has no link to wrestling and doesn't like it. Despite the book being dedicated to her. So, yeah, so my book's out in paperback now. JimSmallman.com/book. It's linked on my Twitter as well, which is at JimSmallman. That's the same as my Instagram. And you can buy the book. It's out in paperback and hardback. And I'll sign it anywhere if you find me and you come up to me and I'll number it. I've numbered nearly 950 of them now. It's out on Audible and on Kindle and everything, because it's a proper book. Published by a proper publisher, which is frankly ridiculous. And was reviewed in the Times Literary Review, where they gave it a really good review. Like, about 6 months after it came out. Yeah, it was great. Like, for someone who was predicted to fail GCSE English because I was a drunk, it's...
just a sentence.
Didn't fail, it got a star.
No.
But it's pretty cool. So please buy my book. And then social media, at Jim Smallman on Twitter. At Jim Smallman on Instagram. I don't really use any other social media. I think Facebook is a terrible device. I've got a Facebook page, but it's all to do with comedy, so I'm not that bothered.
Yeah.
And then next year, probably June 2020, when I would have been doing stand-up for 15 years, I'm going to hire the Soho Theatre, a venue that famously wouldn't book me because I wasn't famous enough. I'm going to book the Soho Theatre with my own money and do a show called Jim Smallman is Fucking Dead. Named after the refused
song, yeah.
So
good taste.
Thanks. It's actually the people of Twitter's taste because they voted for the show
title.
I'm going to do that. I'm going to break all the rules of comedy. I'm going to have a show poster that my daughter's going to take the photo for because she's doing photography at college.
Oh, that's nice.
Where I'm not going to show my face because I don't like showing my face in photos. You're told to never do that in comedy. Fuck you, comedy. I don't care anymore. And I'm going to do one last show. I'm then going to see if Netflix want it. I'm just going to give it them. Don't want any money. I'm going to put it on Apple Music and everything. I want a legacy. I love doing comedy. Outside of the limitations of the industry, I loved entertaining people. I want to do one more show. I've half written it already. I'll have to do new material nights up in the run-up to it, so I will probably turn up at a few places to do new material to test bits out. Then I'll probably do some previews in people's houses, so follow me on social media for that, and then I'll do it. I'll film it, and then it'll be done. Comedy done forever, never coming back to it. So that'll be next year. So follow me on social media, and I'll let you know when I'm doing that. And in the meantime, obviously, watch NXT UK, which I work on, and watch Progress Wrestling, progresswrestling.com, demand-progress.com, where you can also hear Matthew's wonderful, wonderful voice.
Occasionally.
There you go. I've got nothing else to plug. Not yet. I've got some more stuff to plug later in the year.
It's odd to be on this side of it.
That's weird,
isn't it? I'm like, that's really long.
I feel like I need to plug Future Shock. That's normally what one of you lot do normally.
Nah,
when we're doing
it's fine. We don't.
We're
good with that.
Also, watch all British independent wrestling. It's all great. Thanks.
It is. Wicked. You lot need to just make sure you're checking everything out that's on the Distraction Pieces Network, including Falling Forward with Dan Lasak, Hardcore Listing, just the Distraction Pieces podcast with the wonderful Scroobius Pip, and so much more. We're keeping the website, like I say, to jimsmallman.com/TNJ for now. I'm on Twitter at mrichardshost. Let me know what you want. Tweet some ideas at me. Let me know what you would like,
I feel like
from this podcast.
You've turned into that social media thing now, which is a fairly scantily dressed woman with tell me what you want. Which is now apparently how you get retweets.
Exactly.
What's worse than heartbreak?
In fact, when
When I
post that tweet out asking the people what they want from the podcast, it's just going to be me in a scantily clad bikini. And with that image, we will leave you. Cheers.
Bye. Forever.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.